Thanks for joining the podcast with Tamara Gondor. Conversations with everyday innovators that reject status quo, think differently, and make a positive difference in their world. Listen in so you can ignite innovation, influence others, and make an impact too. And now your host, CrossFit addict, knee-high sock lover, and according to her kids, average cook, Tamara Gondor.
Hey everybody, welcome to another fantastic episode of With Tamara Gondor. So today's Everyday Innovator is gonna blow your mind. And I know that because like some of the people that I have the honor of bringing on, I have actually known her for a very long time. And not only have I known her and admired her work, but she's also an IQE Elite Certified Coach. So she works kind of, we work in the same area in very different ways, but she understands everyday innovators. She understands the assessment and she brings this whole new incredible skill set to the table as well. And I think the blending of all that is absolutely incredible. So what she does for her business and what she does for her clients. So we're going to learn a lot today. So Chris, welcome to the show. With that, introduce yourself, tell the world the business you are in.
Okay, thank you, Tamara. So my name is Chris Chopiak. I'm the founder and visual strategist at Arlo Soul Visualize Innovation. It's a small boutique consulting company based in Denver, Colorado, and we work with clients all over the world. That's pretty cool part about my job. We specialize in organizational development of facilitation, large and small group facilitation that's around strategy. And the IQE has been instrumental in helping clients take their business to the next level. So, and especially in change management, which I know we'll talk a little bit about later, but how people see themselves contributing to an innovative process and how they can make change happen faster and with less pain. That's always important.
So I want to just dive right in with a contribution question for a second. I was on a Clubhouse panel the other day. Mm-hmm. And one of the things they were talking about was change management. And I struggle with the word management because I think we're always dealing with change and it's not like it doesn't start and then end and we're done. And I know you see it that way too. But one of the things is people kept saying, we need a change blue map, a change blue map. And I said, well, I think what we really need, and you just kind of started to go there. So I want to get your opinion on this. What I said is what we really need is a contribution map where everybody puts down how they contribute to the bigger vision or the change or where they're headed, kind of whatever it is. And I'd love to get your opinion on that because to me, the fault in the change blueprint these guys were talking about wasn't that we don't need change. It was that there was no connection to the people who have to then live the change.
Exactly. So I think I'm totally with you on the oxymoron change management.
Yeah.
Like you can't manage change. You get things thrown at you all the time. And when you're going through a change process, whether it's ERP implementation, a brand new rollout of a product, reorganization, it impacts the people most, right? So yeah. Just to your point. So the idea of a blueprint is interesting, but there is no one blueprint. This isn't a cookie cutter kind of process. And I think if you can simplify the theory around change, so however you organize the change, and for me, it's really about having a vision, like what's our vision for change, making sure that's really clear. To your point about a contribution map, let people pile on. Like, why do we need this change? And then design and plan for the change so people understand it's coming. This is how it's going to be rolled out because we like certainty. I mean, if we've learned anything over the pandemic is that I want my life to be predictable. I want my kids to go to school. I want, you know, to be able to go to the same Starbucks and without the threat of things closing down. So the more predictable that we can make change for people, the faster we'll adopt it. And we have to buy it. So contribution maps all the way across.
So that is such a brilliant concept. The more predictable we make change. I've never heard it said that way, Chris. So thank you for sharing that. Because as you were saying that, I was thinking, yeah, you're right. What we, you know, as I often tell people, people don't fear change. They fear being changed. And yeah. Oftentimes we roll out change in our teams, in our companies, in our lives, with our kids, you know, whatever it is, without clearly showing them the sustainability of it, the predictability of it. And it makes people feel irrelevant and unnecessary, even if you don't mean to, even if you see how they contribute or how they're kind of part of the team. And so that's it. The way you said that was really powerful.
Yeah. Well, and I think you hit on something too about fear. So, and the fear of being changed. Like, I think one of the hardest things is in any kind of any process, it doesn't matter if it's change process, you're doing strategic planning. It always begins with, how is this going to impact me?
Yeah.
And how is this going to make my life harder? Which is so screwed up, because these kind of processes should actually make your life easier. You should be more engaged. And that is one of the things that the IQA actually helps people do. It's like, I can put a name on what my everyday innovator type is. I can talk with my peers and my colleagues about how I contribute. Then we can make a plan and have fun doing it.
Well, and I think, as you showed me too, in one of our kind of town hall coach sessions, not only do you make a plan, but you can see where you fit in. So, like, I'm just going to use us as examples. We got a little bit of overlap, but we're different. So you are risk taker, instinctual. You are really good at being uncomfortable and kind of leading that change, because you're willing to be bold and kind of figure stuff out as you go. In fact, you innovate best there. But also, the instinctual side of you pulls together the patterns and the insights that I don't see, kind of how things connect and come together, which I think I'm just hearing it in everything you say anyway. Or for me, right, I'm risk taker experiential. So I'm okay being uncomfortable. I'm like, yeah, Chris, excuse me. I'm like, yeah, Chris, let's go do it. And let's get real and get tangible about it. And I need to see it in action so I can innovate. So that point though is, right, that we all kind of fit in different places. And that's actually a really good thing if we can figure that out.
Absolutely. And I think what I've learned from you, especially leveraging your experiential type, is that that actually is my dormant trigger. So I need to, exactly. I need to surround myself with people who are collaborative and who are experiential so that I can test my ideas and make them real. And going back to kind of put a bow on the change, we need to see it to believe it, right? So it takes a few people to lead out in front, those change ambassadors or those change agents. It's like, hey, come on in. The water's great. Like, this is going to be so much better than it was before. And you have to plan for that. Like, just like a keynote speech or just like a play, like, you have to orchestrate that. And I think people lose sight of that. They're like, oh, change, it just happens. People will be fine. And then you wonder why it doesn't work and why your culture is toxic.
Right. Well, and that's the irony, isn't it, about culture is, you know, what I've seen with companies that don't manage it is it's toxic. So there's no such thing as no culture. The question is, what culture do you want to actually create, or is it creating itself? And if you're lucky, you've created a great culture. If you're not lucky, you've accidentally created a toxic culture. I want to go back really quickly to this uncertainty and change and kind of bring it all back. I think that we are, in fact, when you and I are doing this interview is January of 2022. And I had just asked you before we started recording, hey, what do you think is going to happen with live events, with sessions? Like, what do you think we're in for? Because we're back to uncertainty. So not that we ever really left it, but more so now than we were, let's call it 6 months ago, where we thought we were headed in a different direction. And how you, in particular, help your clients manage change and uncertainty. I think this is a lesson that regardless of where we are in the organizational ladder or a stay-at-home mom or an entrepreneur and business owner, I think we're going to get some lessons out of this. So I wanted to get your opinion on how you do that in a way that makes it stick with your clients. Because the one last thing I'll add to it is I read a stat recently that, I don't know, 70% of change management initiatives fail. But you have quite the opposite. You have more like 99 or 100% work when you're included. So, which I'm not kidding for those listening, like really Chris is a master, but given the time we're in particular, how are you dealing? How are you helping your clients and yourself?
So one of the things that I talk about in my business with the kind of consulting and strategy work that we do is we take battle-tested business tools and we innovate them. So we use design thinking and highly participative processes to be able to do that. And I'm going to use this as an example. So, you know, back in the 80s, Stephen Covey talked about sphere of concern and sphere of influence, right? So big circle, sphere of concern, small circle, sphere of influence. And just to help clients remember that, because almost everybody's, oh yeah, okay. It doesn't matter who created it, but it's like, there's a big pile of stuff I'm concerned about, but I have no ability to influence it. I have no ability to change it or move it. Like, everything from the pandemic to, okay, we had an outbreak in my office around COVID, like what's next? So what can I influence? And that is where, that's one of the big pieces of advice. You can just see people on Zoom or in person, they just go, oh yeah, okay. So there are things that I can influence and there's things I'm really concerned about, but I need to put those to the side right now because that isn't something I can really control. And so I would say that's one of the biggest things. I think the other thing is that I'm really advising people right now, and it's super hard. So, and it's going to sound kind of crazy, but whatever your intended outcome, whatever you want to accomplish, or you have this offsite you've been planning for weeks or months about, and then something happens, just hold that lightly. You know, so I was telling Tamara before we got on this is that I have a vacation plan next week, but I am going on vacation. I don't know where that's going to be. It could be Belize, but something might disrupt that, right? So I'm not getting so attached to the beach, actually, until I land. I might end up being skiing, you know, in the Central Rocky Mountains. I don't know, but I do know I'm taking a break. So that's what I mean by holding it lightly. I'm not going to get so invested in one kind of option because there is so much craziness that's happening around that you may have a business opportunity that I just found out, you know, a good friend of mine had that happen December 28th. And she had an option on $300,000 of a business investment. And she was able to pull it out, justify the expense, and get that check in hand before January 1. That's amazing. That is amazing.
You're listening to Conversations with Everyday Innovators on With Tamara Gondor podcast. Let's take a moment to thank our generous partners that make this possible.
Can't wait to share this product with you. It's made a huge difference in my household. It's Howdy Puppy, the premier CBD pet treats for dogs. Now, for those of you who know me, you know I have a 100-pound Mastiff named Zoe Bear, and she is a cuddle bun, but she's 10 years old. And she suffers from two things. First, from the aches and pains of old age. We go for these long walks that she loves, but afterwards she's got joint stiffness and it's hard for her to get up off the floor. And she suffers from a little bit of anxiety. She doesn't love new people. So when you come over to my house, she tends to bark. She gets really anxious. She gets very riled up. So I started giving her CBD pet treats. And guess what? It has helped tremendously with both. Now her aches seem to be a little bit better. She doesn't have as hard of a time getting up off the floor. She recovers faster from our walks. And when people come over, she's less riled up. She's able to handle it better. CBD has been proven to help with aches of old age, joint stiffness, nightmares, anxiety, separation anxiety, stress, hyperactivity. I really encourage you to go check out the website. And here's the best part. It comes in three flavors, steak, bacon, and cheese wraps. And the steak look like steaks, and the bacon look like bacon. And yeah, the cheese wraps look like cheese wraps. So it's so much fun to give it to them. I'm giving Zoe a little bit of steak or a little bit of bacon or cheese every day. It's so great. She loves them. I love what it does for her. It's a win-win. And hey, if you're new to CBD pet treats like I was, I encourage you to go check out the website, because on there they have blogs that talk about the efficacy and the safety of it. This product is great. It is USA grown, USA processed and produced. It is non-GMO. The list goes on and on. But go to the website and check it out. And if you've got a dog that suffers from those aches and stiffness or anxiety or hyperactivity, this might be the product for you. Howdy Puppy. I will put the link in the show notes. And in full disclosure, I love it so much that I am a founding investor and partner. So good. Howdy Puppy.
How do you stay in an innovative mindset without getting exhausted from the years now of resilience and toughness that we've all had to show?
Yeah. For me, I started meditating based on a challenge somebody gave me in January of 2020. And I have to say that kind of is now a rock solid way for me to balance my energy. So it always shows up, and I only do 10 minutes because I can't really sit still for any longer than that. And it always shows up like, okay, when I do a little check-in with myself, how's my body doing? And one of the things I learned from your good friend, Tracy Brown, is the body never lies. Like, we do a lot of mischief making up there in our brains, but the body will tell you how it's doing exactly in that moment. And so if I feel fatigued, if I'm low energy, if I'm depressed, it's happened a lot, then I actually structure my day differently. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean I cancel meetings and I don't have a lot of drama. Like, that's not what I'm talking about, but I really go easy on myself. I kind of set my expectation at 70% output rather than my typical, I gotta get it all done.
I think that's advice I should probably take as an as an A type A. As I say, I'm a free spirit wrapped up in a type A personality. That's my problem. But I appreciate that, because I do think that we just need to not stop what needs to get done, but just find ways to balance our energy a little bit. And I think a lot of being an innovator is about energy management and not getting overwhelmed and exhausted. And I never thought we'd still be talking about this, but here we are. And it's just, you have to look at things a little bit differently. I want to kind of parallel over to my next question for you, which is, you know, for many people, their job completely changed, how they do their job changed, or if you're a business owner like you and me, the type of work we do actually fundamentally changed. Maybe not our lane of expertise, but how we deliver it. How have you navigated through those challenges, and what have you done? What innovative things have you done to move yourself, your business, and I think also your clients forward?
Well, I would say the first thing we did right out of the gate is we got much more familiar with all the online platforms and what are the options. So to help people understand that they didn't always have to use WebEx or Teams or Zoom, like there are lots of different options. Mural, if you're not familiar with that tool, online collaboration tool, has received a bunch of investment during the pandemic and has really become a wonderful way to engage people in small group work where they can have conversation, use sticky notes, and be able to do that design. I think, so well, the first thing is tools. The second thing is to just lean in with our clients. So we're really getting some clarity on what the outcomes, and then co-creating in a way that I've never done before. Usually we have a conversation, I deliver a draft, we have some conversation about it, then it's done. And now we're really getting into the nitty gritty about, how's this flow gonna work? Do we need 2 hours? Do we need 3 hours? Is it over 4 days? Is it like for the next 3 months? Like, really being able to work with a client to manage their energy, their people's energy, and then what the facilitation and the output actually looks like for them.
So I think that that's, I just want to pause for a second on that and loop it back to what you said about make change predictable. To me, Chris, that's a great example of leading the way in that. So if I'm a leader, maybe the thing I need to think about is, when I normally used to tell people we're meeting here for 2 days and this is what we're doing, maybe I need to create a little bit of more open conversation around what's happening next. Not because we want consensus, but because people need to feel a little bit more control than they have in the past. So when you talk about leaning in with clients, what I hear is you're helping them make change predictable on things that maybe you wouldn't need to find predictability in the past.
Right. Especially around control and connection. Right. So I want to be able to manage my world in a way that really works for me, but I also want to feel connected. And so what I think this is going to become even more important over this winter. So January through April, understand that people are going to really need to feel connected in new ways, in different ways. And they honestly, they need to be connected to people they're not connected to in the company right now. And I think this is part of the churn we're seeing in the great resignation or the great renegotiation, is that people are like, I can't be this hamster in a cage anymore. I need to find new ways to be able to connect. And this is, again, coming back to the IQE around innovation. I think one of the things you do so well, and what I love about the tool, is that it just, you're saying like, look, everybody innovates. How you innovate, let's explore that. Let's dig that up and let's share that with other people. Let's find out what it looks like to get on the innovation bus and realize that innovation is happening every day, everywhere. And it becomes a lot more fun to do that kind of work, rather than drudgery.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you've seen this too, Chris, is I think why we're both so passionate about the work, is when someone takes the assessment and it's all, and the person who says, well, I'm not innovative, that's Chris down the hall with her cool glasses and her cafes, right? And then they take the assessment and they read it about themselves and they go, oh my gosh, I do innovate and I do it in all these little ways all the time. And I just didn't even occur to me that I was like that. And that, yeah, I think adds, especially right now, a level of ease that people need, because we need them to drive innovation. We can't do what we did yesterday. It's not working. We got to change things up. Like, we know that. We got to make change predictable. Freaking love that. And, but we need people to be a part of the process and feel included, or like they, like to your point about control, that they have contribution and they have control in that process versus being told, and they're like, great, I'm just going to keep my head down while, you know, Tamara and Chris over here innovate.
Right. Well, and I think it opening the door to creativity is super important right now too. So I'll just give a quick example. A couple of finance people took the IQE and I was debriefing with them what their everyday innovator types are and how it might show up in their work. And they said, you know, I'm super crafty and very creative at home, but I always thought I needed to leave that at home. And she said, I understand now how I can really create at work. And it's almost like she walked through a door. She was like, in my role, in my finance role, I didn't think that was my job. And now I understand that it's everybody's job to do that. And there are things that we could streamline. And it was such a breakthrough moment that I couldn't wipe the grin off my face. I'm like, yes, this is exactly why we do this.
It really is exciting. I mean, the light bulbs go off in people, you know, and they realize, so whether you're a fluid, imaginative, or a futuristic, collaborative, you know, there's all these different styles, that your way is the right way, first of all. And also the other thing, and I'd love to hear kind of your, particularly as it relates to change. I was just working on the how people add value and cause friction based on how they innovate, that sheet that we have. And I was talking to someone about it, and I was realizing how important it is to understand people's innovator styles, because that friction can actually go away pretty easily if we understand that. So if I know, I'm going to use someone on my team who's an inquisitive. Now, I used to get super annoyed by inquisitives because they ask questions, they innovate in the questions, they go deep. Drove me crazy, Chris, like crazy. But now that I understand that about the person, I'm like, oh, that's just them digging, challenging assumptions. That's how they innovate. And now that friction has gone away, but I allow them to use their difference as their strength versus kind of trying to squelch it, which is what I honestly might have done in the years past. So when you think about kind of that add value and cause friction and change, how have you seen that play out?
Yeah, I feel like you were on a call with me earlier with another guy who runs an IT department, and he and I were talking about how especially people in tech kind of like to keep to themselves and just do the work. They don't really enjoy the people problems that a lot of their technology disrupts. And I was talking about how easy it is when we've been very siloed to just stay in that pattern. And I said, but you know, the challenge with that is that we're going to have to confront, we're going to have a confrontation at some point. We're going to have to work together on something. And collaboration doesn't come easy. You have to earn it. Like, you have to really work at it. And I said, so when you have those tensions, instead of allowing them to divide us, how can you lean into the tension, understand that person better through a tool like the IQE to facilitate real collaboration, right? So what I mean by that is that here's what we're going to do. Here's what you're going to do. Here's what I'm going to do. We're going to circle back. We're going to touch base about this, and we're going to accomplish something. That is what builds that collaboration mindset and muscle. I trust you. You trust me. I deliver on what I said I'm going to do. So do you. Okay, let's take this to the next level. And I feel like understanding who I am in that process and to say, hey, look, I don't ask enough questions. So back to your inquisitive, I work with someone who's an inquisitive too. Can you give me five more,
right?
Give me five more questions.
Yeah.
And that just lights somebody like that up, right?
So you said two things that I just want to highlight. So, well, actually one thing you said, and one thing you didn't say that I want to highlight.
Okay.
So the thing you said is, okay, now I know that person's inquisitive. So I'm going to pull out the best in them. I'm going to let them shine by actually tapping into how they innovate. And we haven't talked about that. I mean, that could be a whole nother conversation, but like if you've got a futuristic, let them go to Tomorrowland, let them think about the impact. In fact, ask them questions about the forest through the trees. If you've got an inquisitive, ask them for five more, like, what else are you thinking about? What other questions do you have? And I hadn't really thought about that, but you're absolutely right. Like, what a powerful way to use that tool and to understand and build collaboration. The thing that I find interesting that you didn't say, which I'm happy about, is you didn't say so that we can meet in the middle and change who we are. I think oftentimes we mistake this kind of watered down consensus with collaboration. I don't want you as a risk taker and an instinctual to try to meet me in the middle as a risk taker experiential. I want you to leverage what you're good at and me to leverage what I'm good at and to build a stronger castle together versus trying to water it down. So I just want to highlight that to everybody. Chris did not say that.
Right. Well, and I want to just emphasize something. There's this guy, I think he works for either McKinsey or Boston Consulting Group, Yves Moreau. You can look him up on TED. He has a great TED talk, but he says real collaboration is you have me by the ear, I have you by the nose. So that is tension. That is not, you know, you have me by the ear and I have you by the nose. It's like we are in a struggle for something that's better as an opportunity for us to both contribute to something that is better because of both of us, not because of one of us.
That is so great. I love that. And I think tension is good if we understand it and we understand that it's about the work and the idea and it's not about personal debate, right?
Thank
personal
you.
Personal attacks. I want to ask you about visual strategy. So one of the really incredible things that you bring to the table along with the innovation and the kind of the IQE is an incredible depth of knowledge and ability to communicate and teach and use visual strategy in your work. Will you talk a little bit about why that works so well? What makes it so powerful?
Yeah, so visual strategy, for those of you who might be new to it, is basically depicting your strategy. So I'm talking about a picture. So an illustration that actually tells the story of what your plan is going to be as you roll something out, as you embark on a 3-year strategic plan, whatever that means. And all of them are unique. They're unique to the organization and the people that are pulling them together. Here's some of the things about working visually that we know about how it connects to our brain and the human condition. So first of all, visuals are 60 times more effective than text. 60 times. So I can take a picture. I can take a simple picture of a house. Tamara and I can talk about it. And pretty soon we have a strategy built around one image because we both can identify with that image and it does speak 1,000 words. Like there's a whole bunch of stuff that around that image, you're probably thinking of that right now. The other thing is that we know, and OSHA of all places, I don't think of them as being very innovative, frankly, but OSHA actually requires 80% of every facilitation and every training that they do to have visual representation, because we know that between the ages of 0 and 3, we make meaning of the world by the images that we see and the color, right? So everybody, including people who have some learning challenges and who are autistic, actually process the world visually. That means we think in shapes and we think in color. So that's how it begins. Language is a higher cognitive function. And just frankly, we have to mature more. The brain has to mature more to be able to see it. The last thing I'll say about visual strategy is there is something, I don't know what the brain science is around this one, but as we start working together to build something that we can see, it depersonalizes the vision and the strategy and the plan. And it's an invitation for people to climb in. So everybody wants to contribute to that map or to that visual in a way that really tells part of their story. They feel like they have contributed and they can see visually like where they belong and what their role is and how to execute.
A couple questions on it. One is you don't have to be an artist to participate, right? Like we are really bare bones.
Yeah. Stick figures.
Yeah. And two is it's so fascinating how, because I've seen it in action, I've done sessions, right? I know what kind of comes out of it, how much more lasting the impact of those sessions are when there's visual created. And I wish I had it in front of me, but years ago in a board I was on, we did a visual map. And it was so powerful through the year to refer back to versus that 30-page document that none of us are ever going to read again. And how interesting that words, which have very clear definitions, don't work as well as pictures. Like it's so interesting, and it's true. I'm not arguing it at all. It just, the impact is so much greater when you bring that visual element into it.
Well, and I think that, you know, there's opportunity to scribe or to draw digitally, and then you can do it analog, you know, with a pen and paper. And I also think I'm biased toward the human touch. Like, I'm really biased toward the non-electric approach. That doesn't mean there isn't value in that digital work, and it can be hand rendered too. But really, people, when they see their creation, they see their ideas come alive on the page, they want to go and touch it. And that's human. Like, that is that connection that we're desperate for in terms of making meaning of my contribution at work.
I can't believe we're almost out of time here, because you and I could probably do like 10 podcasts together and still have more to talk about. What other experiences or advice have really impacted you lately, and how you're looking at the future?
Yeah. So a couple things recently, somebody asked me, as a matter of fact, yesterday, if I've done my vision board and set goals for 2022. And there's a great professional coach named Whitney Johnson. A couple years ago, she wrote a blog on how January should be for dreaming. And so that is something I really encourage people to do, is put off your intentions and all that goal setting. We feel compelled, whether by our peers or by just our own self-motivation, gosh, I got to knock these things out. Why don't you dream about what you want for 2022? And then in February, it's a shorter month, so there's a little more time pressure to get it done by the end of February. Then pull out your vision board. Then pull out the conversations you've been meaning to have, or make that tick list. Go and look at your budget. It doesn't make you any farther behind. January always seems to just fly by anyway. And you have had some intentional space to actually explore the possibilities. And I feel like the more confined to home we are, the more confined we are to our geographies, even those of us that are nomadic and traveling, like this pattern, we need some disruption. And I think that dreaming and imagining is something we are really going to need when we come out the other side of this pandemic. If that happens, I don't know what the other side looks like, but you know, eventually,
however we figure out how to move forward, whatever that looks like. Yeah. So it's, I have to tell you, Chris, like every type A bone in my body wants to resist what you're saying. And because I'm like, go, 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 hit the ground. Like, I did my planning in December, because by January,
you did.
Yeah. So, but let me just preface that by saying that I didn't plan the way I would plan in the past, because who knows what's going to happen. And I know that. So I thought more about, all right, what worked, what didn't work, what would I like to evolve? Where would I like my focus to be? Like, it wasn't the same planning I've done in the past, but that's always been that's my routine. And I'm really curious to hear kind of from your experience, now that you've done this, why that worked for you for this dreaming, because I'm drawn to it. I like it. And my type A is like, wait, whoa, Tamara.
Right. No, I hear exactly what you're saying. When I first read that a couple of years ago, I was like, she's crazy. That will never work for me. But then I, through some of my meditation and reflection, I was like, well, why not? Like, I already started doing some pre-planning, like yourself, in December. Can I put the brakes on for a minute and just say, what's possible? What's out there? And I think, like, and I'll give you two specific examples, one that's happening and one that happened 2 years ago when we did a break. The one that's happening is that it was really through that January dreaming that I formulated a new online course called Make Your Mark that will go live sometime in March. And it's an online opportunity for people to engage in the drawing themselves and learn some of my secret sauce around how you incorporate drawing and strategy to get noticed in your company and in your role. And so that's something I'm super excited about. The other offering that came out 2 years ago when I read Whitney's blog post is, we imagined a kind of coaching model called Breakthrough 2020. And we had to completely pivot in March because we had a lot of these scheduled in person. But basically, it's a six-time session. Sometimes it's an hour, sometimes it's a little longer. But we go through helping you get unstuck from whatever you're stuck on, right? And that would have never come about if I had just executed on my plan in 2020 if I didn't take that dreaming time, because it just opened up some space. And once we started, my colleague and I, Katie, who created it, once we started talking to people about it, they were like, sign me up. And it wasn't just about the pandemic. We're now into the third year of breakthrough coaching, and it is super fun. It uses a visual, it uses some of these assessments, it definitely uses the IQE, and people are able to relax. And so that's what I would say to your type A person, is that it's not like you're not doing the work, you're doing a different part of the work. That's really essential.
So what I'm really drawn to, I have to say, and what I think you're is absolutely dead on about all this, is we jump to solution too quickly oftentimes. And when we do that, we actually miss the more innovative ideas, because our brain wants to go to the incremental, what it knows, what it already believes, what it's tried before. So oftentimes in January, just to loop it back to kind of where we are now, part of the reason our plans don't work, or we get frustrated, or we didn't make the right decisions, isn't because we didn't have them in us. It's because we jumped too quickly to solution. And when I look at my last 2 years, I look at the things that that didn't work as well, and some of them failed, and some of them that worked wildly well, you know, successful. The ones that didn't work well, I'd argue, are the ones that I jumped to too fast and didn't kind of just sit in a little more inquiry. So we talk about inquiry and innovation a lot, but we don't really relate it there. So I'm going to try this. We got some time left in January, so I'm going to put the brakes on my I must have a plan desire and see what comes out. And also, I think with the truly uncertain times that we're in, and it's not going to go away anytime soon, we don't know what's going to happen next, but we know that part's not changing. We need more of a chance to think and to just right. not just be so reactive. So I appreciate you pushing back a little bit on me and sharing that, because like I said, the type A in me is like, whoa, Tamara. And to your point, we are doing the work. It's just it's showing up in a different way. It's just not in solution. We're still working. We're just asking questions.
You have to remember that a mentor and friend in Mexico, he calls it percolation.
Yeah.
He will be in a design process and he will say, okay, that's it. And I was like, we're not done. He's like, yes, we are. We need to percolate. And so I've really taken that on, because I'm like, oh yeah. If I get that push, that resistance inside of me, it's like, I need to sit back and not wait forever. Like, take an hour walk, come back to it. Right.
No, it's really, really powerful. And it is more important sometimes than jumping to the solution, is to think about it a little bit more. And I think that's why we have good ideas in the shower while driving. Like, I think it's because we're actually percolating. And that's actually a really good thing. All right, Chris, let me ask you this. As an instinctual risk taker, what advice do you have for other everyday innovators out there looking to do what you've done, which is innovate through all this, influence other people to do the same and make an impact?
I have one piece of advice, and I probably wouldn't have given it in November, right? So it's brand spanking new for January. This is the best time to try anything. I mean, we are in a crazy talent market. So if you've been looking to make a leap and you're kind of thinking, well, I need to 6 months and I need to kind of reframe. People are changing like on a dime what they do. People are leaping from being like full-time in a system to saying, hey, I've had this entrepreneurial idea. I've got some savings. So I would say this is the time to move. There's never been a better time. The market is wide open in terms of what people are interested in. And because we haven't been able to do what we did before, regularly go to the movies, regularly travel around the world, so many cool things are happening online and in your neighborhoods. And so just look around, be inspired, and try it.
Great advice. Great advice. I love it. It's like the time of reinvention, and all of us are open to it too. So if you came to me and said, I'm doing something totally different, I'd be like, great. Like, let's do this, you know? So I think everybody's open to it. All right. I'm going to switch it to you personally to end the show on. What's one thing we'd be surprised to learn about you?
So in November, my husband and I picked up a 1983 Toyota Land Cruiser that actually was bought by my father. And I'm telling you this because tomorrow you'll get a link to the video, but we took it to Western Colorado to have it basically renovated. Resto-mod, I'm learning. But so this is what people would be surprised. Like, I'm totally into the 2.8 diesel Cummins engine. I mean, like some of the more technical aspects about that kind of vehicle, and the whole tribe of you Toyota Land Cruisers, FJ30 and FJ60. Yeah, I'm 100% all in. The car is so much fun. And you wouldn't suspect that of me.
When are we going for a ride, first of all?
Hey, the next time I see you.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's a beautiful car.
Second, I would have never guessed that about you. And I have no idea what you were saying with those numbers and stuff. But I just have to tell you, I'm smiling because I learned to drive on a 1980s Land Cruiser in the 80s.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had it when we lived in Lake Tahoe when I was, on the edge of turning 16. So I learned on snow roads with a long stick shift in our 1980 Land Cruiser that I think we imported from Australia or something like that.
Probably.
Yeah. And like, I love that car. And every time I see one on the road, I just have a moment of, because I love them.
Yeah, you're going to love this car. Because it got painted and it's this sky blue. It is gorgeous.
Oh my God.
And you can drive it.
I can't wait.
It is so fun.
I can't wait. I'm so excited for both of us.
Yep.
Chris, it has been so great to have you on. Just to close out, I just want to say, Chris, your work is phenomenal and it makes an impact. I mean, it's just, you drive innovation every day in your world. The two examples of the offerings is a wonderful example of that, how that came out of just being willing to think differently about how you even plan and innovate and serve your clients, and your expertise around visual strategy, as well as just understanding how you make change happen in a positive way. Not that there isn't challenge, but a positive way that actually gets results is incredible. So if you're out there, Chris is the one to call for that type of stuff for your team, without a doubt.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Tamara. And, it's very symbiotic. I love using the IQE as part of that process. So thanks for all that hard work. Yeah.
Congratulations. By listening to this podcast, you took another step towards becoming an everyday innovator. To leap forward, visit www.gotolaunchstreet.com and take the Innovation Quotient Edge Assessment to discover your unique everyday innovator style and access the Everyday Innovator Digital Magazine for the top tools, insights, and inspiration at your fingertips 24/7. Tamara will be back with another Everyday Innovator conversation soon. In the meantime, if you got a nugget of value out of this podcast, let Tamara know by leaving a 5-star review and comment. Your review equals more guests, more listens, bigger impact. Until next time.